Time for our Friday interview. Jane Olorundu was just 2 years old when her Nigerian-born father, Max, was killed by an IRA bomb that was being transported on a train he was travelling on. Jane has written a book about her experience growing up here. Legacy explores her own mum's childhood in Strabane and the prejudice she experienced when she married Jane's dad. It also looks at Jane's own personal battle with an eating disorder and the racism that she encountered growing up in Northern Ireland. Jane began by telling me how her parents first met.
They actually met at a party in Derry, and my dad sort of came along to the party that night, almost a blind date. She had seen him, thought he was absolutely gorgeous, but had said, should he be Omar Sharif, she wouldn't be interested. But from that moment on, dad, could we say, launched a campaign to make sure that he ended up dating my mum.
Her parents didn't agree.
Well, back then, mum grew up in Strabane, very small town, very Catholic background, and people of colour probably weren't something that you would have saw every day, late 60s, early 70s. They took a while to get used to my father and the fact that mum was marrying someone from Nigeria. I think it was more sort of, mum would say, one of the things that they had said to her at the time was, you know, what would the neighbours think? Because it would have been quite scandalous back then. But one thing that I really stress in the book is by the time mum was pregnant with my eldest sister, my gran and granddad came around and they actually became almost a second set of parents to my dad. I think it was just the initial shock back then of somebody of colour in Northern Ireland and marrying their daughter.
You were 2 years of age then when you lost your dad.
Yeah.
What happened?
Dad was on his way home from an audit in Ballymena. He got on the train and, unbeknownst to him, sat in a carriage facing two men who had carried a bomb bound for Central Station in Belfast. The bomb went off prematurely and it killed my dad and a young schoolboy and one of the bombers. So really, that was Dad's last ever journey. He thought he was coming home on a normal winter's night and never really made it.
And obviously you would have been too young to realise what was going on, but that was your dad taken away from you at such an early age.
I think that was sort of one of the key things that really inspired me to write the book and call the book Legacy. Because of Dad's background and Mum's background, already they were a unique couple back then in Northern Ireland. But the fact that, you know, my dad came all the way from Nigeria and died in such a way, it meant a lot to us children, because we were half Nigerian, but we didn't know anything at all about Nigeria because Dad had died. I would often say to anyone who had asked me about the book, and they will look at me funny, I'll say, I am fortunate that I didn't know my dad. And it sounds quite strange, but I don't know if I could have coped with such an incident, because when I was growing up, I grew up in the aftermath, and I'm using legacy in a very shallow attempt here, in the sense that I grew up in a grief-stricken home. You know, everyone else remembers this man, but all I saw was the pain of what had gone before. My mum in particular, became very anti-IRA, almost obsessed with the news. She constantly watched the news.
And your mum was from Strabane,
yep.
Jane, which you described at the time of her childhood as an increasingly bitter Catholic enclave.
Yeah. She talks of it when she was growing up, when she was very young, it would have been quite mixed. But as the Northern Irish situation started to escalate, the Protestant families started to move out to maybe more Protestant areas, which meant that Strabane became more and more Catholic. By the time I grew up in Strabane, it was known as a Republican hotbed. You know, obviously, like any town, you have your nice people and your decent people, to say, but I think the overall political direction of the town was nationalist stroke Republican, which was very difficult to live in as IRA victims.
And did your mum get bitter?
She did. she actually became, whilst growing up, it would have been the point, you know, it got to the point where we weren't allowed to play with certain children. And apparently, whenever we were really, really young, she didn't even let us out of the house. She was afraid that because her husband had left on a normal day, the same would happen to your children. It could happen to anyone.
Yeah, but any parent will want to keep their kids safe. But did your mum not let you play with Catholics?
Not necessarily Catholics, because it was a small town and she knew. It was one of these towns where everybody knows everyone. She would have believed, rightly or wrongly, that, oh, such and such a family's connected, you can't play with them. And one of the worst situations, I think, for us as a family was, we've been brought up for a long time, you're not to play with the children from a particular estate. It's full of the IRA. So, you know, you're only a child and you're hearing that, and you believe everything you hear. Little did we know that 7 years later, we would have our home repossessed and we would end up living in that estate. So certainly I think that was one of the things that changed my perceptions. You always grow up and you believe what your parents say verbatim, but then you get to a particular age and you get to see things for yourself.
And was it while you were in that estate, because you talk in the book about sectarian and racial abuse, mm-hmm. is it while you were there that happened?
No, that actually mainly happened in Belfast.
What happened?
We had moved off to Belfast, and I always say it was Mum more or less chasing the Belfast that she knew before Dad had died, the happy times. So when I was of the age 14, we moved to Belfast, and we weren't in a position to buy a house. We had our house repossessed. So we went up to private rentals. Mum would have been familiar with South Belfast. Unfortunately, we were priced out of the market. So we started to rent houses in areas that were maybe more loyalist-unionist, nationalist-republican. So we never really fitted into any area. When we would live in a more loyalist area, they found out, you know, you used to live in Strabane, therefore you're Catholic, Republican, or you lived in a Catholic area, they found out that you were an IRA victim, so you were anti-IRA. Back then we didn't have a ceasefire, so it was quite difficult. But on top of all that, we had the colour aspect going on, which meant that, and again, this probably would have happened regardless of the area we lived in, but there was always that element of name-calling and little taunts every day, culminating in the early 2000s with a swastika painted on the back door, tyres slashed, etc. So, Belfast...
Tell us about what happened to you in school. It was your sister's teacher, wasn't it?
It was indeed. My eldest sister had drawn a little picture of herself on the blackboard. It was just a little stick creature, and the teacher sort of looked at the picture and said, "Who's that?" And as any child would, she said, "I'm drawing me." The teacher said, "That is not you. You are a Negro, and this is what you look like," and drew what she perceived a black woman to look like. With the result, my mum...
She scrawled a child with big lips and fuzzy hair and bad posture. This was a teacher doing this?
That was a teacher.
My God.
I was very fortunate, and my other sister would have been in that. My mum saw red and had gone to the school, and really from that day, I think they sort of treaded quite carefully. You know, they knew there was this was a major mistake. But for me, it was the fact that this had happened to my sister in front of a classroom of other children. These little things, they all have an impact on you in later life. And the fact that it was found acceptable by a teacher educating young people.
We're talking to you about how much you fitted in to Northern Ireland, and you always felt that that was at the root of your problems, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Even to this day, I sometimes wouldn't feel completely accepted. You have, you know, different things and happening, different race-hate attacks happening and that. And part of you saying, this is my home, I don't know any different. But at the same time, you see how people from, not everyone, but, you know, if I lived in a particular area or if I walked down the wrong street, I'm instantly a foreigner, and you know you're opening yourself up for attack. I think for me, especially in the last 10 years, it's been a very, very hurtful time. Again, as I say, I don't know anywhere else from Northern Ireland, but different events in Northern Ireland make people like me feel very, very unwelcome. I've had the comment, "Why don't you go back home?" Levelled at me on numerous occasions. And I always used to think, well, where do you want me to go? I don't know anywhere else. Northern Ireland, by default, has kept me here. I'm a carer for my mum. She's lost her husband at the hands of the Northern Irish conflict, which has really kept her in Northern Ireland. And as such, I'm kept in Northern Ireland. Therefore, if these things, if the events that happened to my family hadn't have happened, maybe the bigots would have their way and I wouldn't be here. But right now, my family...
Is it really that difficult being here? Do you get a lot of abuse?
No, I would say I am in the fortunate position that I have a very, very good group of friends, old and new, and I am quite careful. Very recently, there are certain areas that I just won't go to. I wouldn't go to certain parts of East Belfast. I wouldn't go to certain parts. Basically, if there's been race hate attacks in that area, and I know in some ways I'm letting the bigots win, but I would not go to those areas anymore.
So you would be fearful of going to East Belfast now?
Certain areas of it, yeah.
Because of the colour of your skin?
Yeah. I wouldn't feel comfortable, and I certainly wouldn't go there alone. One of my biggest fears, and it's something that I've spoken about a lot, is that these attacks could spiral into the case where someone actually loses their life. And I wouldn't want to put my family through another loss. So for me, I would rather go to places that I know are safe and where I feel comfortable. There are certain areas where maybe you'd have had Ku Klux Klan flags, you maybe would have had someone told to leave their homes, locals only. Well, any sensible person in my position, you know, wouldn't go to those areas. And I think it's a very sad state of affairs that this has come about.
Do you think racism is getting worse in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, I do. I think it's...
Why would that be, though? Why? Why now?
I really don't know. There's so many different theories on the racism problem in Northern Ireland. I do know that, you know, we were getting to the point where we had two race hate attacks a day. I had never heard the likes of that. You know, I think it's quite barbaric. I think that Northern Ireland has had such a difficult past. It's a country known for one side fighting against the other side. And yes, whilst we still have certain aspects of sectarianism, I think some people feel they need to channel that hatred into something. So it's the next obvious target, really. And right now, that next obvious target is race.
Yeah, racism is the new sectarianism.
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
You mentioned your mum earlier on, that you were a carer for her. Mm-hmm. She had mental health...
She does. Really, from the day my dad died, people had said there was a huge change in my mum. And it really went downhill from there. All I remember in my childhood was growing up in a really dark home. And I mean that physically and literally. Mum would have kept the blinds closed and that. But she would have often taken to her bed for days on end. That continued right through until my 20s. And really took me to get to my late teens, because I thought that this was normal. So it took me to be going to other people's homes and seeing their parents out and about to realise that this really isn't a normal situation. So really in my 20s, I sort of thought, this mum's got some sort of a problem. I didn't know what it was. I thought at the time it was a deep, deep depression. I sort of had to start contacting different government members, contacting different victims groups to see if there was anything that could be done for a victim of the Troubles. I knew that the incident was related to my dad because mum would have talked about flashbacks. She would almost see herself reliving certain instances of the time when dad was alive and of the actual night that he died, loud noises, bangs, etc. I didn't know for about post-traumatic stress then. It was only when I started to really seek advice and extra help for mum that I began to find some sort of understanding. But I find it very, very difficult to find anyone within Northern Ireland that could help a victim who was mentally ill as a result of this conflict.
You talk about this in the book, don't you, where you talk about Martin McGuinness and the Queen meeting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was one day that I won't forget. And for most people, yes, it was a historic day. But for my family, it was a very, very painful day. Because at the end of the day, our lives had been turned upside down. My mum will never be well again. as I've said, my sisters and I became more or less black girls growing up in an all-white world, not knowing anything about our identity. Really, as life was turned upside down. And there we have Martin McGuinness meeting the Queen. So you have a figurehead from the UK meeting Martin McGuinness. And I can just sort of remember sitting down and thinking, what was it all about? And as I said that, I turned around and listened.
Did you not want progress? Did you not want to see Northern Ireland? Did you not see it as moving forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, you come to the point where, for me, you think, what was it all about? And then you think, well, regardless, it's done. No one can turn the clock back, you know, and there's no point in analysing that particular meeting. And I had maybe a day, you know, that one event for most people, it was an event, it happened, and yeah, it's a historic incident. In my house, I spent maybe a week talking to my mum about it, saying, you know, Martin McGuinness and the Queen could shake hands, they could decide not to shake hands, but where is it going to get us if they don't? No one is going to bring back or dead. And that's the sad reality of Northern Ireland. No, nothing really will bring them back, and but we can't have it happening again. So we need to see people reaching out. Whether, you know, for some people like my mum, like my sisters, it is sometimes unpalatable, but these things need to be done.
And your dad's death had the effect that you've described to us on her mental health.
Yeah.
You had an eating disorder.
I did. I developed...
Was that as a result of what you were enduring in Northern Ireland, the racism, the sectarianism, or what do you think?
I really don't know. What I've learned over the years is an eating disorder was about control. I suffered from anorexia and bulimia for almost 20 years. And normally, at times when my eating disorder got out of hand, there was a direct parallel with my mum being really sick. So I would have maybe become, at a young age, I would have had to have looked after the house, etc. It was a lot of pressure. Also, I was always deeply disturbed by the different events on TV. Number one, they had a televised funeral, whatever. Number one, I knew it was a very, very sad event. But secondly, I used to think, every time these things happen, oh, it's going to set Mum back again. Are we ever going to get peace? Am I ever going to have normality?
And was this eating disorder, Jane, eating a lot or eating very little?
I went at one point down to 5 stone, where I just didn't eat anything.
5 stone?
Yeah, 5 stone. And my overwhelming memory of the time was not being able to find trousers that fitted anywhere in Belfast.
How old were you?
The time I went down to 5 stone, I would have been 23, 24.
My goodness, and what height are you?
I'm 5'4". So it was...
So you probably should have been in hospital at that weight.
Yeah, I should have been. And I knew, I did know at the time that I wasn't well, but as I say, now looking back, it was my outlet. And at that particular point in time, the main sort of victims initiatives that we see now, they were becoming really predominant in the press.
You say in the book you contemplated suicide.
I did.
Why?
I just felt so... I didn't see a way forward for my family. At that point in time, we were in Belfast. We were living in areas where we weren't welcome. Mum was getting more and more unwell. We were probably just after ceasefire. It was just a very dark, depressing situation. And I didn't see a way out. I just remember thinking, I'm stronger than this. You know, I'm not letting this get to me. Someday, you know, I will be better, and we will get, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. So whilst I contemplated it, I'm very fortunate that I didn't do anything about it. But again, that was because I think I knew I had people relying on me.
So racism pushed you to the point where you wanted to take your life?
Yeah, I got to the point where when I was in my 20s, I had taken my little dog to the park and met a very unsavoury man who I would have said would have been in his 50s at the time. And he levelled a lot of abuse and grabbed me, etc. There was no one around, and I just felt so small.
What was he shouting at you?
The N-word, go back home, you're taking over. all just it was just a horrendous torrent. It just didn't stop.
And all these years later, there are still some places in Northern Ireland, right in the heart of our city, East Belfast, for goodness sake.
Yeah,
it's where you're frightened of going.
It really frightens.
What does that say? All these years later.
Yeah. I become sometimes really disheartened when, especially when writing the book. I was writing about my mum's start in life and my mum meeting my dad. You're talking 1970s, and they faced racism. And I can remember questioning my mum and saying, why did you think you could have children here if you were having dreadful racism even then? And she said, wait a minute, this was 1970. I married the man I loved. We were going to impart each of our cultures onto the children. And you would have liked to have thought that 30 years later, these sort of incidents would be a thing of the past. And instead, what we're seeing is 30, in fact, nearly 40 years later, these incidents getting worse, moving from sticks and stones to actual physical attacks.
And would you want to bring your kids up in this country, given the level of racism?
No. I don't have children. And if I did, I would have to really, really consider how they would fit in this society. Could I shelter them? I don't know.
And yet here you are, you're in politics, you joined NI21, you're now in the Alliance Party, and yet you don't want to bring kids up in Northern Ireland. So how much do you not believe in this country?
No, I one of the things that I believe is people need to, there's an old saying, never judge anyone until you walk in their shoes. I would like some people just to feel the fear you get as a perceived minority in Northern Ireland. The reason I went into politics was because it is my home, contrary to what some groups in the society believe, it is my home, and I feel that it does have a lot of potential. I feel politics needs to put a lot more effort into creating a more inclusive society for everyone and embracing diversity, and also in emphasising that you can have people like myself born and bred in Northern Ireland. I am encouraged by looking at the schools and seeing that there are more and more dark-skinned children coming through.
But look at, for example, the likes of what your colleague Anna Lowe's had to go through.
Yeah.
And she was saying in this programme she'd contemplate getting out of this country. And now you're saying if you had kids, you'd contemplate getting out too. Like,
I know, but I would contemplate getting out if the situation continues. And I think that, I mean, I'm not a parent, so it's really hard for me to say. But, I mean, I wouldn't want my children to grow up in a country where there's two race attacks a day. But I do think that there has to be a solution to it, that if more and more people condemn it and more people, like figureheads like Anna Lowe, speak out and raise awareness of the problems in Northern Ireland, that these things can be solved. I would hate, really, really hate to think that 10, 20 years down the line that, you know, this problem is still continuing. I would like to think, and I probably am being optimistic here, but I would like to think that this is a blip, and that somehow we will progress and that we will become a more accepting society.
Okay.
In fact, I have to think that in order to live my daily life.
Really interesting speaking to you today, Jane. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much indeed.